us have suffered painful, emotional, and relational hurt. God calls us to forgive those who have hurt us, but that's often easier said than done. We don't usually know how to forgive others, nor are we always sure if we have truly forgiven them. Hello, I'm Etta Dale Hornsteiner, and today we have with us psychologist and counselor, Dr. Everett Worthington. He is the leading Christian researcher on forgiveness. Dr. Everett works as a professor of psychology at Virginia Commonwealth University. He has published over 30 books and 350 articles and scholarly chapters predominantly on forgiveness, marriage, and family topics. But it is on forgiveness, which he frequently speaks on. Dr. Everett, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be with you.
What a privilege to do this interview with you and to have you share nuggets of what you have spent years researching, and that is on forgiveness. And how many years would you say you've been researching the topic of forgiveness?
Well, I started really getting interested in it back in the 1970s or early 80s in terms of counseling, but I really started doing research on it about 1990. So I guess that is going to total up about 23 or 24 years now.
Why such a strong interest in this topic?
Well, it's one of the central parts of Christianity, and that is my faith perspective, and so you know, the center pieces of Christianity are really love and forgiveness, and so you know that makes good sense from a theological standpoint. But also, I was doing mostly marriage counseling in the back in the 70s and 80s, and with marriages, forgiveness always is a topic that comes up when marriages get in trouble.
Mm-hmm. And I know this may be personal note here, and you can tell me this if you don't want to go there. But I read in your book where your mother was brutally murdered. And was it also then that your interest in forgiveness grew stronger?
It was. I had been studying forgiveness by that time in about 6 or 7 years, and scientifically. And that really changed things. It made it a lot more personal. It made it a lot more emotion-driven on my part of really wanting to find out about forgiveness and how to help people forgive who were struggling with it.
I know initially when we talked about looking at this aspect of forgiveness, we were looking at the scientific part, and I think that you have done quite a bit of research on the science of forgiveness. Do you mind sharing with us about that?
Sure. I usually joke that I have poor impulse control when it comes to researching forgiveness. If I see it, I want to study it. So we've spent a lot of time looking at the health consequences of not forgiving and the health consequences of forgiving, and have found with many, many studies that if people are holding grudges, they're putting themselves at risk for cardiovascular problems, for heart attacks or strokes or other cardiovascular problems. Their immune system doesn't function as well. Their cortisol level, which is a stress hormone, is higher, and that really affects virtually every system in the body. Really high levels of cortisol can actually shrink your brain, reduce your sex drive, and just play havoc with your entire physiology. So we studied the physical impact of forgiving or not, and we've also looked at the mental health consequences of forgiving and not forgiving, and not surprising that people who are unable to forgive often have more depression, more anxiety, they ruminate more about hurts and offenses that they undergo. That is, they play them over and over again in their mind, like kind of the Late Late Show with endless reruns. And that it really can affect all kinds of mental health aspects, such as people can get psychosomatic disorders or obsessive-compulsive disorders, post-traumatic stress disorders, as well as depression and anxiety. We've looked at the relationship aspects of forgiveness and how if people are able to forgive, they can restore their relationships better, they can reconcile better. And we've looked at the spiritual aspects of both forgiving yourself and forgiving other people, and we found a lot of things are related to the people's spiritual life when they don't forgive someone. So basically, overall, if people don't forgive, it can affect their whole life, especially if this it becomes a chronic way of being in the world. But if they do forgive, it really frees them up to a healthier lifestyle.
This is scientifically based study that you have looked at and gotten results. It seems to be very few research on the physiological aspects of forgiveness. You're one of the few research that has actually delved into this area.
Well, there are surprisingly quite a few researchers that have studied it. Charlotte Whitfleet up at Hope College in Michigan has wired people up to physiological measures for probably the last 13, 14 years and done multiple studies. Kathleen Lawler in North Carolina has done the same thing. There have been people in England who have studied brain waves. There have been people in Italy that have looked at functional MRIs and other types of physiological measures. People have looked at the chemistry of what happens in people's cells and what happens in people's body. So there really are quite a lot of scientific studies on the physical aspects of not forgiving or forgiving.
Right, right. And obviously the conclusion is that, especially on the side of unforgiveness, is that it is just bad for our health.
Yeah, right. If you get a chance to hold a grudge, it'd be better not to do that if you can avoid it.
Right.
And of course, that's what is hard for some people. They really struggle with being able to forgive and knowing how to forgive. They know the Bible says we should forgive, but it's like, well, how? How do you do this?
Right. Right. Exactly. I know. I was particularly very interested in a study that was mentioned in, I'm not sure which one of the books I looked at, I was reading Forgiving and Reconciling and the Power of Forgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And the study was between two groups. One was empathy-based, and the other one was self-benefit-based.
Right.
I found those results very intriguing. Can you tell us about the study?
Sure. It was a study we did, actually it was a series of about five studies that we did in the 1990s, and we looked at what people's motivation for forgiving was, and we found that that there's nothing wrong with forgiving so that you are healthier, so that your mental health is better, so that your relationships are better, so that your spiritual life is better. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, it really helps. But what helps more is to forgive so that you can give a blessing to this person who hurt you. You know, if you've been hurt, you're in a very unique position of being able to give a gift of forgiveness to this person. So in our program to help people forgive, which is at evworthington-forgiveness.com. A lot of free resources there. In that program, we try to help people first realize that they're hurting themselves if they don't forgive. And so that's a self-benefit motive. But then we appeal to them that, but if you really want a big impact of forgiving, then try to get into the framework of this person who hurt you. You know, this person probably did not get up in the morning and say, hot dog, today I am going to ruin somebody's life. You know, we know we've all hurt people, and we didn't set out to hurt them. We usually set out to help them, and just things went wrong. And often that's what, not always, but often that's what happens in our lives, too.
You know, I grew up in a Christian home, so I've always heard about, you know, forgiveness, especially for our Father prayers. And of course, you learn that in order for God to forgive you, you have to forgive others. So I've learned to do it because, okay, this is what God requires.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, when I heard that there was benefits, health benefits, also because of forgiving, I really could receive that and understand that. Oh, that makes sense to me.
Right.
But when you put it in your book as a treasure to the other person and blessing the other person, that's a leap of faith for a lot of people. And I'm not sure they can even comprehend that. You know, when you talk about, for example, a young woman who may have gone through something traumatic like a rape, I mean, how in the world are you going to tell her, are you giving this person who hurt you in such a violent way
Yeah, what we do, that's why we start off talking about how this really does benefit us if we are able to forgive. You know, it has these health benefits, these mental health, these relational, these spiritual benefits. So on the other hand, forgiving to bless the other person is something that takes time. So it starts out in the first hour. People just resist that. You know, they say, no, I don't want to do that. That's the last thing I want to do is bless this person. But as they work and try to see things from the other person's perspective, and even if they can't empathize with the person, maybe they get to the place where they feel like, well, you know, I can sympathize with this person. You know, I feel sorry for them that they got to the place that they could hurt me, and I can feel compassion for them, and I can even feel love for this person who's made themselves my enemy. And those emotions replace the negative emotions of the resentment and the bitterness and can change people's emotional life, not just have them make a decision to forgive, which is a very important and crucial, but also to experience a change in their emotional experience.
Okay, and I think this is a good place for us to talk about the two different types of forgiveness, because you can forgive can you forgive and still have negative emotions? And so perhaps you want to clarify for us or explain to us the two different types of forgiveness.
Yeah, we've found that there are two distinct types. They're not two halves of one experience of forgiveness, but really two different experiences. One is to make a decision about how you're going to act toward this person. And this, we believe, is what God requires of us. God wants us to treat that person as a valuable person, a creature that's created in God's image, even though fallen, you know, to have respect for that person and not to get revenge and try to get back at the person. That's decisional forgiveness, to make that decision that you're going to treat them differently. But even if you make that decision, you may still have an emotional reaction to this person. You know, our soul gets conditioned to, just responding emotionally when we've been deeply hurt. And so in order to have that soul healing, we need to replace some of those negative emotions with positive, other-oriented emotions. And that's what that second type of forgiveness is. It's an emotional forgiveness. So we believe that God requires us to make a decision to forgive, and God desires us to experience total emotional freedom. But God doesn't require that emotional freedom. That's something that comes along over time often and isn't under quite the same control as my ability to make a decision.
So they can happen in separate stages, but the first step is decisional.
Well, actually, it doesn't have to be. If you can imagine, I suppose I hurt your feelings, and you look out your window and you see a car just knock me, off of my feet, breaking bones. Your emotions toward me may change instantly. You've not made a decision to forgive me, but you just find it hard to hold the grudge against me anymore. I've experienced this. Your sympathy, your compassion, your love overwhelms the resentment that you might have felt. Later, you may go back and then make a decision to forgive. So it does, neither order has to happen, in one order or the other. Sometimes they both happen together. Sometimes people make a decision first, and sometimes people's emotions change, and then they look back and they say, "Oh, I forgive that person."
Okay. So I was particularly interested in another aspect of something I found out in your writing about forgiveness and memory. I was always taught to forgive and forget. But I read in your book, and I'm going to quote a little bit of it, this is from The Power of Forgiving. Some have argued that people should forgive and forget, but forgiveness requires remembering, not forgetting. If we forget, we need not forgive.
Yeah, it's like if I've forgotten something, I can't forgive it because I've forgotten it. It's not in my memory, So I have to be able to remember something, but remember it differently. Remember it in some kind of way that's been transformed. Maybe seeing God in the midst of this, or Jesus standing in the midst of this, or just kind of thinking of the things that I work through in order to try to forgive the person. But I will remember it differently without as much bitterness and resentment.
Right, because I think the line, I love the way you expressed it when you said, when we forgive, memory is not erased, rather, it is transformed.
Right.
Yeah, that's really interesting to note because I've always wondered about that, especially, if you ever wanted to share the experience and say what you've learned from it, because it could be an opportunity to teach others or to help. And so, so I guess it makes a lot of sense when you talk about the memory being transformed, seeing it in a different light rather than seeing it as, oh, this person did this harmful thing to me, but seeing how you can use it as a lesson to help others or even, to help yourself not make the mistake again, because I think you even mentioned that.
Yep.
I have two questions from two individuals, and one of the questions that was given to me is, why is forgiving a betrayal so hard?
So why is it hard to forgive a betrayal?
Yes.
I think of I think of forgiveness as being one of the things we could do in response to an injustice. So if I experience an injustice of some kind, there's this gap between the way I would like to see things resolved and the way I see things right now. And if it's a big gap, it's really hard to forgive. If it's a small gap, if somebody bumped into me in the street, and didn't say I'm sorry, I might grumble a little, but that's pretty easy to forgive. So betrayals, because they deal with trust in a relationship, they are usually big things. They are big injustice gaps. And this same event that might have happened if a stranger hurt me versus if this person that I have trust in, that I have love with, and they're very close to me, and out of the blue I feel betrayed, the same event has many, many, many more times the emotional impact. And so it's many, many more times hard to forgive.
And another question that I got is, what is the first step toward forgiveness? How can you follow through with it daily?
So what we do is we have a program that helps people to forgive. This has been tested in 22 randomized clinical trials, about half of them by us and half of them by other people all over the world. So this works for lots and lots of people. And we say it is a program to reach forgiveness. So reach is an acrostic for REACH to help people remember the steps. So the first step is to recall the hurt. I have to recall the hurt. I can't just deny this, but I want to recall it in a different way, not a way that says what a jerk that person was for hurting me or what a victim I've been and how much I've been damaged, but rather to say, I'm going to try to empathize or sympathize or feel compassion for this person. I'm going to try to put something else in there than just the plain old memory and the condemnation. And so that's the second step. We call it emotionally replace the negative with the positive. Do that with empathy or sympathy or compassion. And then the third step is to give that altruistic gift, that agape gift of forgiveness to this person who doesn't deserve it. It's a gift they don't deserve. And so I give them that gift. And then once I experience some change in my emotions, so we've gone R, recall the hurt, E, emotionally replace, A, altruistic gift, and then C, I commit to the forgiveness I've experienced. And the reason I do that is so that I can hold on to that later if I doubt that I have forgiven.
Have you worked with other countries based on your research with forgiveness, such as countries perhaps, I know Rwanda, for example, where forgiveness is part of the healing. Of course, the most recent, Nelson Mandela, he also led, his own country into, forgiving in order to help heal it. Have you worked with other countries in this way as well?
Right. Oh, I've had the privilege of working with quite a number of countries. I in 1996 was in South Africa and had the opportunity to speak with some Christian counseling conferences and on the, national television, and also to testify in front of the Johannesburg Truth and Reconciliation Commission there. Desmond Tutu was on a board of advisors of a nonprofit corporation that I ran to raise money to support research and forgiveness. So, I had some good connections with South Africa, but also I worked with a group down in Latin America and South America and also in Mexico, 8 different countries, that is headed by a Catholic priest named Leonel Nazarez, and he has developed, based on our program and another program, he's developed a way of intervening in 8 different countries in South America and Latin America, and won an international UNESCO award for that research. You know, I've had the chance to work with a lot of Asian countries. I've been to Singapore 3 times, and I taught classes at a seminary in the Philippines 2 times, and been to Hong Kong to work with their government, their hospital authority 1 time, and to China to work over there, Macau, New Zealand, Australia. So I've been blessed to be able to talk with governments and also people all over the world about forgiveness.
Right. It certainly is a virtue that is not limited to the individual, but it's certainly needed by, you know, for a country to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so amazing about forgiveness, because I've always, you know, thought it was just attributed just to your Christian way of living, you know, in terms of something you did within yourself or your friends. But when you use it in such a way to bring healing to a country, to a nation, you really see the power of that virtue at the local level.
Yeah, my mission in life is, I formulated back in the 90s, and it's to do all I can to promote forgiveness in every willing heart, home, and homeland. And that's, you know, I think what God put me on earth to do.
Yes, that's beautiful, and I would certainly agree with that. I think the work that you have done is astounding, and it's just amazing, and it's such a contribution to the growth of the kingdom of God. And if others wanted to read more of your work, which books would you recommend mainly to them? Just say, for example, for pastors. For the average individual, what would be the recommendation for these types of people?
Well, I think there are 2. One is the book you mentioned earlier, Forgiving and Reconciling. It is a book that is an InterVarsity book. And another one deals with forgiving ourselves, and it's called Moving Forward, and it's with Waterbrook Multnomah. So both of those are Christian self-help books that really are based on this program of research that we've had going for 23 years. And so they're not just kind of, oh, I had this opinion. They're really the product of thousands and thousands of thousands of people's experience. And I think that they're practical, how to do it, how to work through this. The Bible tells us what to do, and you know, this kind of helps us succeed at doing that.
And do you have a website if someone wanted to go to and find out more information?
Yes, it's evworthington-forgiveness.com. And that gets you in, and there's free downloadable workbooks for people to run groups in forgiveness, Christian groups or secular groups, even if they are running one at work. There's all kinds of materials to help folks, and then you know, it mentions the books that I've written, but it's really about providing resources for folks.
Ev, I want to just thank you once again for doing this interview with Live. It's been truly informative, it's been enlightening, and you have challenged me, at least, to really look at forgiveness, you know, in a different way than ever before.
Oh,
and many
good.
Times we think about you know, forgiveness as being something, you know, for, you know, you're going to be weak if you do it too often, you know, despite we know Jesus said you forgive, or, you know, you forgive no matter what. But sometimes we feel, you know, that perhaps we're allowing someone to take advantage of us, or we're going to be a doormat. But it really is for the strong. And I want to leave with our listeners a few lines from your book, The Power of Forgiving. And it's, and these words are, to pursue forgiveness is to seize an opportunity to grow. Sometimes we don't grow because we avoid opportunities to be tested. A tree planted in a tree nursery is frail, with a fragile root system. An oak tree planted on a windy hill has roots that are deep and strong. And then you say, I invite you to seek those deep, strong roots to lean into the wind. Thank you, Ev.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you inviting me on your show.